I ask you, are you spiritual? Many people have noted the dramatic outbreak of spirituality across America in these latter days. Increasing numbers of Americans are becoming interested in spiritual matters. Just yesterday, I saw a country western musician say to a reporter, "I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual." Now, most of this spirituality tends to be rather gossamer, vague, ethereal stuff in an attempt to billow one's spirit and rise above the messy mundaneness of everyday life. I ask you, are you spiritual? And you reply, "Yes, I do yoga, namaste." And as a Hindu, you can get away with that sort of thing. But the trouble with Christianity is that God came down from heaven and got all mixed up in the messy mundaneness of everyday life when God took human form. In other words, as Christians, we get spiritual by getting real. Which means, of course, on this Stewardship Sunday, living in this capitalistic, comfortable 21st century America, if you're going to worship the God revealed in Jesus of Nazareth, our money decisions are spiritual decisions. What we do with our possessions affects our relationship with God. We're accountable to God for what we do with what we have. God cares about the material decisions we make. I think of Matthew 25, 14 through 30, the parable of the talents. The servants who are given 5 talents and 2 talents and 1 talent. And the master comes back, and the servant who was given 5 talents multiplied his to 10. The one given 2 having doubled his to 4. But the one who had 1 talent was fearful of that hard master and came back and said, "Because you are a hard master, I buried it in the ground, and here is my 1 talent. And the message to him from the master was hard indeed, "You wicked, slothful servant. So you know I reaped where I had not sown, I gathered where I had not winnowed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I could have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents, for everyone who has will more be given, and he will have abundance. But for him who has not, even what he has will be taken away, and cast the worthless servant into outer darkness. There men will weep and gnash their teeth," Jesus says. And that's a fearful message. We are accountable before God for what we do with what he has entrusted to us. Our money decisions are spiritual decisions. And our money decisions matter. Now, we resist this like the plague. We like to think that God may have given us all that we have, but we thereby have become owners, and that it's all ours now. Even though God may be the source of plenty, it's now ours, and we have no responsibility before God for what we do with what we have. But you see, God hasn't transferred the title. The truth is that we are temporary managers of what's been entrusted to us. We are not the owners. We're accountable for what we do with what we have. I still remember an ad that used to run on TV back in Virginia before I came here. It was an ad for a bank, and the ad was the lifetime of a little boy. And it starts out with this little boy being delivered, and it's a very realistic delivery room in a hospital, and everyone's in hospital gowns, and the mother is breathing deeply, and the father is there with doctors and nurses, and the little boy is born, and he's held up. And the rest of the ad is flash forwards from his life, lived out under the care and concern and protection of the bank. And they hold up this little boy, and then they flash forward, and you see this little guy riding down the street throwing newspapers on lawns, and you think, okay, he's earning his first few pennies passbook savings account, okay. And then back to the delivery room, and he's going off to some swanky college, obviously provided for by the management and loans of the bank. Back to the delivery room, And there, he and his very attractive wife are stepping over the threshold of what is supposedly their first house, some starter home. And the mortgage department has come through, and then back to the delivery room, back and forth, back and forth. And they finally come to the end of this, and they show this silver-haired gentleman, again with a very attractive wife, standing at the helm of their yacht, sailing across the screen. And the tagline of the ad is, "Our philosophy at such and such bank is that even though you came into the world with nothing, you shouldn't have to leave it that way." Well, as Jim Francis at Lupton's funeral home once remarked to me, "Andrew, there are no luggage racks on hearses." We are accountable to God for what he has given us. And there are ramifications with God for the right use of what God has entrusted to us. I think of Luke 12, 32, 34, where Jesus tells those who seek to follow him, "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Provide yourselves with purses that do not grow old, with a treasure in heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Jesus is saying that giving brings us closer to God. God has given us what we have, and in doing so, has given us a tangible way of drawing closer to God by how we handle the material things of money and possessions. God has offered us a way of living God's life, and it's by giving. We are able to be closer to God as we give back to him. Jesus' understanding about money and possessions can be summarized in 2 points. Number one, he says that money can be the greatest asset we have in our relationship with God. Money is the best thing we have to deepen our experience with him. He says, if you want to be close to God, look at how you handle your money. And he tells us stories about the widow with 2 copper coins, the woman who shows more love of God in her meager little gift than all the superficial large dollar gifts of the wealthy. The Good Samaritan who stops by, the man laying beaten on the side of the road and interrupts what is, I'm sure, a busy schedule. He cares for the one lying on the side of the road, takes him to urgent care, and gives them his credit card, paying for it himself. And Jesus says that what he has done is what it means to love your neighbor. Or the story of Zacchaeus, that little short tax collector, who, in order to get a good look at Jesus when Jesus comes to town, scampers up into a tree. Zacchaeus was so despised by everyone in the town for how he unscrupulously served the Roman overlords that no one would have anything to do with him. And Jesus comes into town and he says, "Zacchaeus, get down out of that tree. I'm coming to your house for lunch today." Before Zacchaeus has cleaned up his act, Jesus accepts him and he loves him. And Zacchaeus is so overwhelmed by this unconditional love of Jesus that Zacchaeus does amazing things. Zacchaeus says, "Today I give away half of what I have, and if I've cheated anyone," which is one of the great spiritual understatements, cheating was part and parcel of his best practices, "if I have cheated anyone, I will repay them fourfold," Zacchaeus says. He writes a check, as it were. And Jesus says, "Today salvation has come to this house." Zacchaeus gave his money, and knowing where that comes from out of his heart, Jesus says, "Today salvation has come to his house." Money can be the greatest asset we have in taking that step forward toward God. But there's a flip side to that. Jesus says that money can also be the greatest hindrance to our experience of God. We know the experience of the rich young ruler, the one who's kept the commandments but needs more, and Jesus says, "Sell what you have and give it to the poor and follow me." But he won't. He won't give up his possessions, and he goes away sorrowful because the gospel tells us he had many possessions. He couldn't have both money and Jesus, so he chose his money. Money got in the way of him experiencing the kingdom when it was offered to him. Or the story of the rich fool and his barns, the one who had so much grain stored up in his barns and couldn't think of anything to do with it except build larger barns to hold more grain so he could be safe and comfortable in his retirement, all the while neglecting his spiritual life. His security is in his possessions, as today we call them securities. And the message to him is, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and your possessions, whose will they be? And so it is with those who are rich, but not rich toward God, Jesus says. Money can be the greatest threat to our relationship with God. Now, of course, you and I have a problem with this. We have a big problem with this. You and I do not think this message applies to us. Me? No, my problem with money isn't a spiritual problem. My problem with money is a practical one. I don't have enough of it. Yet Jesus says whether we are as rich as the rich young ruler or as poor as the widow with two copper coins, what we do with our money is a spiritual issue. Our spirituality is not, what would I do if I won the lottery? No, it's what will I do with what I have. All of this has best been summed up for me by the theologian John Westerhoff when he said, our material lives are important because they determine as well as express our spiritual lives. Determine as well as express. Westerhoff says it's simply misleading to work on the assumption that if people are committed, they will give, and therefore place our emphasis on seeking commitment. It's wiser to work on the assumption that if people give, they will become committed. We are more likely to act our way into a new way of thinking than think our way into a new way of acting. And so this morning I say to you, try giving and see what happens to your spiritual life. I think of the story of the two farmers who were discussing their church and their annual stewardship campaign. And Hank turns to Fred and says, Fred, if you had 100 cows, would you give 10 to the Lord? And Fred says, gee, I don't know. I've never thought of it. I don't have 100 cows. Well, sure, I'd give 10 to the Lord. And Hank says, great. If you had 100 sheep, would you give 10 to the Lord? Fred says, sure, I'd give 10 to the Lord. And Hank says, well, if you had 10 pigs, would you give 1 to the Lord? And Fred says, that's not fair. What do you mean it's not fair? You know I have 10 pigs. Amen.